WZEZ H910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. An Iranian national charged in a murder-for-hire scheme targeting President-elect Trump. Authorities say the plot was linked to Tehran's paramilitary forces.
Attorney General Merrick Garland said there are few actors in the world that pose as grave a threat to national security as Iran. The president-elect was made aware of Iran's intent to kill him, but his spokesman said nothing will deter Trump's return to the White House.
ABC's Aaron Katursky, Iran today denying any involvement in an assassination plot. Federal authorities are investigating mass racist texts sent to black Americans after the election. The messages, which invoke slavery, are being probed by the FBI and FCC across multiple states. As Russian drones strike Odessa today, killing one and wounding 13, Moscow indicating it's open to hearing President-elect Donald Trump's proposals on ending the war between Russia and Ukraine. A suicide bomber targeting a crowded train in Pakistan, killing at least 26 people. This is ABC News. Israeli airstrikes in Gaza, killing at least 13, including children, today as aid trucks finally reached the north after weeks of blockade. A shelter-turned-school was among the targets, causing civilian casualties. A suicide bomber targeted a crowded train station in Pakistan, killing at least 26 people. The attack, which also injured over 60, involved the bomber disguising himself as a passenger. Back here at home, the Auburn men's basketball team's flight to Houston had to be grounded shortly after takeoff Friday because of a scuffle involving two Tigers players. The incident was over before it escalated into anything serious, sources said to ESPN, but the flight's personnel opted to turn the plane around.
Yes, sir. Is there any way you could coordinate with Auburn to have a sheriff or police there?
2681A, affirmative.
Thank you, sir.
No comment from university officials. The team did finally fly out on a replacement flight Friday night. The number 11 Tigers face number 4 Houston tonight. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Finding the special health care resources families need just got easier. Wisconsin Wayfinder, Children's Resource Network, helps kids with delays, disabilities, special health care needs, and mental health conditions. Call toll-free 877-947-2929. Ask questions. Get answers. Connect today toll-free, 877-947-2929. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Tom, your thoughts.
I don't believe that people don't know who Trump is at this point, and they have willfully decided to ignore everything he has said in order to vote what they think is the most important thing. And that's what voting is all about. But you can't claim ignorance when it comes time that Trump is going to pull the trigger and do some things that are going to hurt you and your family. That's what's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Donald Trump's victory was in large part due to voters in rural areas like here in Wisconsin. Mike Moen reports.
While other contributing factors are discussed, a rural expert says it's clear longstanding political sentiments in smaller towns haven't changed. As the results from Tuesday night are examined, political analysts cite Trump's gain with Latino voters. Colby College's Nick Jacobs, who has written about rural issues, says the campaign also regained some ground in rural America that it had lost in 2020. Jacobs says if the media or political strategists try to again understand why these areas still largely back Trump, they have to resist preconceived notions.
We're going to see it again with these diner interviews, is that prior to even being interviewed, rural people were put into this prefabricated box. And the truth is that voters in rural places and urban places, they're complicated.
But Jacobs says Democrats should keep trying to produce local candidates who can relate to these voters, adding that having both parties find success in rural America is good for democracy. Jacobs says his research, along with separate polling, has shown that rural and urban voters often agree on certain issues.
Concerns about corporate monopolies, freedom within sort of the marketplace, whether that's for healthcare or reproductive rights. There are very few major policy issues that divide the two.
The Biden administration's big policy achievements, the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, have paved the way for a lot of rural investment. But Jacob says many projects aren't shovel-ready yet, and aren't likely to move the needle with rule voters hesitant to embrace them. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
More news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Northern Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For today, a few clouds and a high near 48. For tonight, rain is likely, lows in the upper 30s. Rain and 48 on your Sunday. Sunday night, slight chance of a shower, mostly cloudy, breezy, 37. Monday, partly sunny, a high of 45.
Right now, 40 degrees.
Maggie Dawn.
Next, Jim Santel, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, is in the host chair for the Maggie Dawn Show.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
This is Amicus, a law review on the broadcast network of Civic Media. Honored, delighted to have you with me for this, the second hour of our weekly broadcast on all things related to courts and justice, the administration of the rule of law in America, in Wisconsin, in our communities as well. Talking a lot this weekend about things related to the election, of course, the campaign coming to a conclusion with the election of Donald John Trump as our next president of the United States of America, inviting into our syllabus, our aggressive but achievable syllabus here on Amicus Law Review, your questions and your inquiries at 855-752-4842. My producer, my spectacular producer, Greg, and I taking your questions, also soliciting those questions on the Civic Media app as well. We have spent much of the first hour talking about not only some additional stories coming out of the election of this past Tuesday, but also what is the status and what is the impact of Donald Trump's election on two of those four cases, the state cases that remain pending against him, the criminal actions. We know that Donald Trump is scheduled to be sentenced by a state court judge. His name, once again, Juan Merchan in Manhattan. That's coming up later this month for his 34 counts violations found by a jury there way back in May. We know as well that in Georgia, Fannie Willis continues to prosecute a case there, even though the omnibus, that sweeping RICO indictment against Donald Trump for election interference in Georgia, continues to be the subject of review and analysis and some opinion rendering at some point by a Georgia appeals court. In the meantime, we also know that because of the way our nation is structured, that is between states and a federal government, there is very little, if anything, that a president, an attorney general, a Department of Justice can do to direct, to officially tell a prosecutor, a judge in the state system what to do. And as a result, those cases should, although may not perfectly, survive a Trump presidency, even if they go ahead into 2025 and 26. Lots of issues will be raised, lots of challenges in those state courts, in those federal courts, about whether that's proper, given not only the decision by the Supreme Court that says that presidents are immune from many kinds of crimes committed in the White House, that stunning constitutional revision. That will be raised, the issues of, again, a state's authority to make decisions that might imprison, might incarcerate a sitting defendant. How does that work? We've never had to wrestle with any of this. And so much of this will be the subject of continuing court action, argument on both sides by prosecutors, by defense counsel, adjudication by judges. And that leads us, of course, to the other two cases, where the situation is both more complicated and less complicated. We know what those other two cases are. We know that one of them is in the South as well. That's the Florida case. Let's start there. That's the case involving documents, classified documents, other documents, the allegation there against Donald Trump and a couple of other individual defendants, all of them charged with attempts to and successfully retaining documents in the national interest, in the national security secrets, classified documents that they should not have taken from the White House in the beginning, and also attempt to obstruct justice in the government's attempt to get those back. So those indictments, those charges still pending there in Fort Pierce, that's a federal district court in southern Florida. And of course, as you know well, that case has been pending before a federal judge. Her name is Eileen Cannon. And she not too long ago did something dramatic, did something that is unfounded, unsupported, and almost certainly to be reversed. But she found that Jack Smith, again, the federal prosecutor prosecuting that federal case based upon a decision by a federal grand jury finding by probable cause that Donald Trump and these others had engaged in violations of federal law. She found that Jack Smith had no authority. The attorney general had no authority to appoint him to be special counsel, and therefore the entire case has to go away. That's what she found not too long ago. She was taking her lead, of course, from Clarence Thomas, who in a notorious, famous now concurrence in one of the recent Supreme Court cases, said that, you know, some of those district courts should take a look at whether or not Jack Smith has the authority to do what he is doing. Well, Eileen Cannon seized on that, issued an order that is unsupported, unfounded, unprecedented, not supported by Supreme Court cases, not supported by the decisions of other lower courts, appellate courts across the board, not supported by virtually anybody across the political aisles. But nonetheless, she decided to dismiss the case. Jack Smith, of course, not happy with that resolution. None of us should be. Took that case, that decision, up to the Court of Appeals, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals that includes Florida. It includes South Florida. And as a result of that, right now, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, a three-judge panel in that appeals court, that federal appeals court, now reviewing the federal decision by federal judge Eileen Cannon to dismiss that case. They have also taken briefs. They've also taken oral arguments. And they are right now going to be deliberating on whether or not she was right or wrong. This is the same appellate court that previously reversed her resoundingly and said, Eileen, you're doing this wrong. They reversed her when she was trying to affect the very conduct of the investigation that led to the indictments by grand juries against Donald Trump. And so the 11th Circuit right now pondering that. That's the status of that case. Jack Smith filing motions, filing his own memorandums to say, 11th Circuit, tell Eileen Cannon she was wrong. Follow the precedent of the United States courts around the country for decades and find that the special counsel, specifically me, as Jack Smith writes this, can, in fact, does have the authority to prosecute these cases. They almost certainly will do that. And the question then is when they send that back to the lower court, lots more work to do in that case because lots of things were unresolved, including national security secrets when it comes to a trial in that case. Many things yet to be resolved. The other question, of course, is what will Eileen Cannon herself, who has issued these very anti-government decisions, will she be the one who continues to oversee the case? Or will there be a directive to assign this to a different judge who has not shown the bias that she has shown, the unprecedented, the unsupported bias that she has shown in her dispositions of these cases to this point? And so all of that pending right now in the Florida case. Then we go up back to the northern portion of the East Coast and we return finally to that federal insurrection case also being prosecuted by Jack Smith. That is going on, has been going on for a long period of time, well over a year, against Donald Trump as a singular defendant. Others named as co-unindicted co-conspirators, but Donald Trump, a singular defendant in a four-count indictment, also returned by a federal grand jury, 26 people finding probable cause to believe that Donald Trump engaged in a variety of different criminal acts in violation of the criminal code, finding that and supporting then an indictment against him. pending now in the district court in the District of Columbia, which is where the insurrection, where the criminal acts allegedly took place. All of this, again, hastening the comment that Donald Trump is presumed innocent until shown guilty, but nonetheless facing these grand jury indictments in South Florida and in the District of Columbia. This is the case. This is the case that prompts the Supreme Court ultimately to grant, effectively, to grant Donald Trump's position, his request, his motion, to find that he is immune from certain kinds of conduct, including this. You may recall well that Tanya Chutkan initially had said that, no, there's no immunity. She did that consistent once again with over 200 years of authority. That went up to the Court of Appeals, the D.C. Court of Appeals, and they also issued a compellingly readable opinion that affirmed what all of us on all sides of the political aisle thought, which was that we do not have kings in the White House. We got rid of that with King George somewhere around 1776 and years following. And in that, those rulings from Tanya Chutkan and in the District of Columbia Appeals Court, a strong affirmation of this notion that no one is above the law, and that a president does not enjoy immunities to commit crimes in the White House. That goes up, as you know, to the Supreme Court this past summer. And suddenly, in April, they have an oral argument in which they say maybe there is something to this argument. And on July 1, right before the independence observance of our nation's birth, the United States Supreme Court says something we've never heard before. A stunning articulation of an amendment to the Constitution that says, yes, indeed, a president does have some immunities with respect to the Department of Justice. They're absolute. Can't touch him. Anything he does and says with respect to the Department of Justice, obstruction of justice, directing that witnesses be suborned perjury, directing that evidence be created, all those kinds of things, can't touch him. Absolute immunity, a stunning order. For the rest of the engagements of a president, presumptive immunities. And that also a part of the Supreme Court's opinion, authored by, yes, that's right, Chief Justice John Roberts. Keep his name in mind as we talk about my other theses about the power in the White House and in the government generally in the weeks and months and years ahead. All of that, then, is the opinion of the United States Supreme Court on July 1, sending that back to Tanya Chutkan and telling her that she is now obliged to apply those principles to the pending indictment against Donald Trump that is still in front of her. And yes, as you know from our discussions here on Amicus, Tanya Chutkan has been doing just that. She's gotten her homework from the Supreme Court, and she has been soliciting from counsel for the government, that's Jack Smith, counsel for defense, that's Donald Trump, soliciting from them statements of position about what she should do. What does the Supreme Court case mean when it comes to being applied to those four federal counts against Donald Trump? And she has entertained, again, arguments in both directions along the way. As you know, very famously, she has released the documents filed by the government to this point. And she has directed that counsel for the defense also file their brief. She has not made any decision on that yet. That's her homework. She's doing this as she would with respect to any other defendant in any other criminal federal case pending in front of her. She has said notoriously, famously, and rightly, accurately, that she is not going to be directed by the campaign, not going to be influenced by the conduct of the campaign in scheduling this matter. And so she has not postponed, unlike Juan Merchan, anything in that case. She is now soliciting from and reviewing those submissions, including one supposed to come in from the defense later this month. As Amicus Law Review continues, we'll tell you about what happened just days ago that are going to impact that case in front of Tanya Chutkan and what she did in connection with the prosecution of Donald Trump for federal felony counts in her court. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on air.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
My name is Jim Santel. This is Amicus Law Review coming to you this weekend as we review the status of these criminal cases pending against our president-elect, anticipating his swearing in January, anticipating 4 years of Donald Trump in the White House. What's going to happen? What is happening with these cases, the state cases, New York and Georgia? What is happening with the federal cases? Again, following our review of their status there in South Florida, in the District of Columbia, what happened just this week that affects dramatically both of those federal cases? Let's talk about that right now. Now, Jack Smith is inside. He works for the Department of Justice. He is special counsel. He is still subject, of course, to the rules and regulations, certainly the structures and the procedures of the Department of Justice. Among those, not constitutional, not in the Constitution, not legislatively, not in some piece of legislation there, but inside the Department of Justice, many policies and procedures, just like you've got them in your own business, your own office, lots of things that are inside the Department of Justice that direct how the Department of Justice, its many employees, will work. Again, not the subject of legislative directive, but nonetheless, things that the Department of Justice follows can be changed at any time by an attorney general. But internal to the Department of Justice is this policy, is this practice against prohibiting the criminal prosecution of a sitting president, Now, how does that implicate and how does that affect these cases, the federal cases? Again, these are federal cases, and so subject to federal law, federal restriction, federal legislation, federal policy here as well. What that means, of course, is that it is a practice of the U.S. Department of Justice for all administrations, at least in contemporary history, not to proceed with the prosecution of a sitting president. Well, right now, Donald Trump is not a sitting president, a point that I will resurrect in just a moment or so. But Jack Smith, early in the wake of the election of Donald Trump, sending some signals, maybe just viewed signals from the media, that he was beginning to pack up both of these prosecutions, both in South Florida and in Washington, D.C. Why? Because he recognizes that on January 20th, about 70 days from now, Donald Trump will be a sitting president. And at that time, come 12:01 on January 20th, the policy, the internal practice of the Department of Justice will require that he and his staff, the attorney general, others, not prosecute a sitting president. And although the information was coming out sort of informally in the wake of the election, something significant happened just on Friday of this past week, and that is this, that Jack Smith filed a formal motion with Tanya Chutkan, even as she is still weighing this issue about whether or not the immunity decision applies to the indictment against Donald Trump. Jack Smith filed a motion, a petition with her, and basically said that because of this policy pending right now, and it specifically talked about the unprecedented circumstance of this defendant's election as the president of the United States of America, he has asked her not to move forward with respect to any further proceedings in that federal case. Special Counsel Jack Smith asking her basically to stay, to vacate, to remove all the remaining deadlines while he comes back and thinks more, ponders more inside the Department of Justice about what to do, if anything. Jack Smith filing that on Friday of just past week and noting once again the timeline that very soon the defendant, Donald Trump, will become the president, presumably precluding a prosecution of him under this Department of Justice policy and significantly, Judge Tanya Chutkan granted that request. And she has now vacated, as of late this past week, all the remaining deadlines, including presumably the deadline imposed upon defense counsel to weigh in on this issue about whether or not the immunity decision of the Supreme Court affects in any way the further administration, the prosecution of the case. Same presumably going to be happening with respect to the 11th Circuit and Eileen Cannon, although a different procedural process there, right? Because that's pending right now before an appeals court. What is the specific upshot of all this? The reality is that unlike the state cases, which do have some continued vitality by virtue of the fact that they are state cases, the reality is that these federal cases will almost certainly go away. And that we will not see trials of the four-count indictment against Donald Trump for election interference, the counts against Donald Trump and the others for taking those classified documents, using them perhaps in ways that are contrary to our national interests. We will not see trials of those, anticipating highly likely that come December 2nd, which is the deadline that is now imposed upon Jack Smith to tell Tanya Chutkan, probably a like deadline at some point to tell the 11th Circuit what it should do, if anything, with respect to the appeal pending there in the 11th Circuit on the documents case. Department of Justice now figuring out what should happen here. December 2nd is the date by which Jack Smith will tell Tanya Chutkan and the rest of us what the plan is here. And almost certainly the plan will be not to go forward with those cases. And that leads me now finally to my opinion, my view on what should indeed happen here in the wake of all this, in the wake of the almost certain event that the federal cases will not see the light of day beyond the Trump presidency, perhaps even before that, that we will not see trials. We will not see adjudications by a jury in South Florida, by a jury in the District of Columbia, on whether or not the soon-to-be president violated the federal law with respect to those documents in South Florida and violated the federal law with respect to the insurrection, the attempt to interfere and overturn the election of 2020. We will not see that in American history. Because of the election of Donald Trump, those cases will almost certainly go away. And the opinion, the perspective that I now offer to you here on our broadcast is, how should that happen? It appears that Jack Smith, almost certainly in consultation with the attorney general, that's how this works. He is independent, but still his boss is the attorney general, is going ahead and heading toward the possibility of his moving to dismiss the case affirmatively. He hasn't done that yet. Asking Tanya Chutkan for what's called leave of court to dismiss the case against Donald Trump in Washington, D.C., very likely perhaps also going to appeal to the 11th Circuit to dismiss that appellate proceeding, raising the issue of whether Eileen Cannon was right to dismiss the documents case, maybe also petitioning again if it's sent back to the district court for the ultimate dismissal of that case, although it's already been done by Eileen Cannon. That's probably where we're heading based upon the tea leaves we're reading right now. Jack Smith's filing of late this past week saying, pause all of this. Tanya Chutkan agreeing to that. And let me offer the view that that's wrong, that that shouldn't happen. That, in fact, there are some very good jurisprudential reasons. There are some very good public reasons for these cases to go ahead under this administration, under the present policies and procedures of the Department of Justice, not in violation of the prohibition against proceeding against a sitting president, at least not during the coming 70 days, because we don't have a sitting president who is subject to those cases. Here's what should happen. According to my view and perspective of others who've looked at this, we deserve as Americans, and the law of the case deserves to know whether or not Eileen Cannon in South Florida was right in dismissing that case. We deserve to know what Tanya Chutkan thinks about the application of the immunity principle to her case. All of that further discussed as Amicus, a law review, continues.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. An Iranian national charged in a murder-for-hire scheme targeting President-elect Trump. Authorities say the plot was linked to Tehran's paramilitary forces.
Attorney General Merrick Garland said there are few actors in the world that pose as grave a threat to national security as Iran. The president-elect was made aware of Iran's intent to kill him, but his spokesman said nothing will deter Trump's return to the White House.
ABC's Aaron Katursky, Iran today denying any involvement in an assassination plot. Federal authorities are investigating mass racist texts sent to black Americans after the election. The messages, which invoke slavery, are being probed by the FBI and FCC across multiple states. As Russian drones strike Odessa today, killing one and wounding 13, Moscow indicating it's open to hearing President-elect Donald Trump's proposals on ending the war between Russia and Ukraine. A suicide bomber targeting a crowded train in Pakistan, killing at least 26 people. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
The Bucks lose in New York. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks fell behind early and lost to the Knicks at Madison Square Garden, 116-94. Doc Rivers on what he was most disappointed in.
I would say just the offensive rebounds. You know, early on, I thought, you know, the first 8 minutes, we got stops on every possession, and then they got the ball back. I think they had 8 offensive rebounds in the first 9 minutes of the game. You know, they kept moving the ball. Then they shoot, they get a rebound. They get another rebound, and now we're walking the ball up the floor, playing slow basketball.
The Bucks will host the Celtics tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock. College hoops, number 18th ranked Marquette with an 82-63 win over the George Mason Patriots. Boys high school volleyball, Sussex Hamilton won the state title last night in 5 sets over Middleton. Tonight, the Hamilton girls team faces Divine Savior Holy Angels for the championship, 7:30 at the Rest Center in Green Bay. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Northern Wisconsin weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, a few clouds and a high near 48. For tonight, rain is likely, lows in the upper 30s. Rain and 48 on your Sunday. Sunday night, slight chance of a shower, mostly cloudy, breezy, 37. Monday, partly sunny, a high of 45.
Currently, 42 degrees.
This is a community reminder from Buzz of the North. There's a free kids movie each Thursday at the Sherman and Ruth Weiss Community Library located right in Hayward. And that happens Thursday from 10:30 a.m. until 12:30. And this is a weekly event, happens each Thursday. Again, a kids movie at the Sherman and Ruth Weiss Community Library in Hayward each Thursday from 10:30 until 12:30. Community reminder for you from the Buzz of the North.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Siegel joins us now to make our popcorn pick of the week. Hey, Mike.
When I was a kid in the 70s, there was no Walmart. There was no right. Sears was everything, from our tools to all our back-to-school clothes, everything else.
Right? Pants, stereos, kitchen appliances. Do you have pantyhose? Yeah, they're right next to power tools on the second floor. It's like you really could get everything there.
Everything.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Dom Salvia Show.
I had somebody recently in one of the classes I was teaching saying to me, I don't do politics, Mr. Santel. I don't spend all my time watching MSNBC and reading the opinion columns. I get that.
You might not do politics, but sooner or later, politics is going to do you. Yeah. You got to have some basic level of understanding of what government is about and how it functions and a little bit of the history of it.
You need to do enough.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we continue looking for California guy Eric Hovde, and we'll hear from Mr. Global Matt Randolph, oil and gas expert. He's fantastic. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
This is Amicus Law Review, continuing with our discussion here in the broadcast studio of Civic Media, joined by my outstanding producer, Greg, who, together with me, taking your questions, your inquiries at 855-752-4842. We're going to get to some of those questions and comments in just a moment as I finish up my opinion on what should and should not happen here. As to the 11th Circuit, it is my view that the Department of Justice, perhaps contrary to what he may do in the weeks and days ahead, let the 11th Circuit do its job. Let the 11th Circuit issue its opinion on this very clear issue that contemplates that a special counsel like Jack Smith does have the authority to do what he's doing. Have the appeals court issue yet another opinion, not only telling Eileen Cannon that her decision to the contrary is wrong, but also for future, and this is the important point, for future special counsels, for future attorneys general, an 11th Circuit, another appellate opinion, adding to all those others out there, reaffirming that a special counsel process is constitutional, it's accurate, it's right, it's decent, it promotes the rule of law. Let the 11th Circuit do its job. Now, we can't dictate exactly when the 11th Circuit will issue those opinions, but don't dismiss that early. Don't go to the 11th Circuit and say, well, gee, we can't prosecute this case anyway. Let them do their job and do it at a time when that policy against the prosecution of a sitting president is not in effect. Donald Trump is not now the sitting president. He will be at 12:01 on January 20th. And at that point, of course, presumably, Jack Smith and this present attorney general will no longer have the authority to act. Presumably, Donald Trump going to remove them if they have not left already. But let that process go ahead, not only for the purpose of the precedent on that special counsel issue, which applies to all administrations, this one, a future administration, and all of them to come, get that reaffirmed, and also for the purpose of responding to Eileen Cannon, who has issued an opinion that is unprecedented, unfounded. Let the nation, let the world see that this is a judge who has issued an opinion without authority. All of those reasons commend the notion, support the notion, approve of the notion that Jack Smith should not dismiss that 11th Circuit Court of Appeal petition that's pending right now. And similarly, and perhaps even more compellingly, Jack Smith, an attorney general, don't dismiss the indictment against Donald Trump in the next 70 days. Perhaps that's where he's headed, because he's going to say, indeed, under these unusual circumstances, we know we can't go ahead after January 20th. You know that will not happen anyway. The same reasons apply. Let Tanya Chutkan do her job. Let Tanya Chutkan spend the month of December into January pondering this issue. Let her issue this opinion for the same reasons. Let's get in the history books, let's get in the jurisprudential volumes of our nation a document, a statement by a federal judicial officer that that opinion from the Supreme Court saying that their immunities does not in fact apply to these particular offense conduct, set of offense conduct in that indictment. Why? Because they're not official. These are not things done by Donald Trump in his official capacity. Nothing about what is in that superseding indictment returned by a grand jury in the District of Columbia, none of that is prevented from prosecution by Jack Smith or a future prosecutor, because the notwithstanding the significance, the horrific significance of that Supreme Court opinion, nothing about that opinion prevents this case from going ahead. Now, will it? No, it won't. But the opinion itself is significant, not only for jurisprudential reasons, not only so that it is a part of the law of this case, just as the law of the case in South Florida in the 11th Circuit would be there, but also for the American public. It is significant in these next 70 days for this administration, for Jack Smith, for this attorney general, for this government to bring what it can to conclusion in these cases, anticipating that they will not survive beyond January 20th, but nonetheless getting the statements out of these cases that can, in fact, and normally would be. And here's the other point. If they don't do that, if they do not, in fact, dismiss these cases, they remain alive when January 20th comes. Donald Trump, almost certainly because he has told us he will do these things, will engage in this inappropriate, not illegal, not unconstitutional, but inappropriate thing of directing his new attorney general, even an acting attorney general, to dismiss those charges against himself. A stunning thing in and of itself that a newly invested, a newly sworn in president is directing the chief federal law enforcement officer now to dismiss the counts against him, returned by a federal grand jury in South Florida and in District of Columbia. My advocacy is let Donald Trump do that himself. Let Donald Trump, again, for those who support him when it comes to the rule of law issues, we've got a wonderful text already from Mary in Mount Horeb, and she is talking about the rule of law. Mary, this is exactly the point. For those people who are embracing the rule of law would contemplate that simply because the change in administrations happens in our history, the process of justice should not be affected by that. Let Donald Trump, if he is going to do that, he's going to undermine the rule of law, let him do that. Let an attorney general of his making be the one who makes that decision and tells us that that's one of the first actions of a new Department of Justice under the Trump administration, in addition to telling America what it is that these cases mean and what they could have meant, even though with clarity, they will not go to trial. They will not see the light of day when it comes to a trial jury determining whether Donald Trump is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. That will not happen either in Florida or in Washington, D.C. But there are things in the next 70 days that this Department of Justice, this attorney general, this special counsel should proceed to do, not to actively prepare for trial. Yes, indeed, the staff can begin to dissipate, but don't do the dismissals right now. Let these cases proceed as they otherwise would, because there's a basis for doing them procedurally, substantively, and there are benefits both in the public domain for us to know what the law is in these cases for the future, even if they do not see the light of day in trials. And there is a benefit to the system of justice, to the rule of law, to the kind of thing that you, Mary, talk about when it comes to the rule of law being out there. There's also a benefit for the oath of office. Len also indicating in our text this morning, this weekend, that the oath of office means something. An oath of office for this president, attorney general, this special counsel, the oath taken by judges, by justices, and yes, the oath of office taken by a new president not to do the kinds of things that Donald Trump probably will do. That is stretching across Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House and telling, dictating his Department of Justice what they should do when it comes to particular prosecutions, making himself not only the king, if you will, but the judge and the jury of his own case by directing the dismissal of the very charges that are pending against him. Let him do that if he is going to do that, and let that be the cornerstone. One of the first things that he does as the chief executive, one of the first things that an acting attorney general would do, we will see whether or not all of this will be mooted, whether or not this attorney general, Merrick Garland, this special counsel will, in fact, ask the judge to dismiss those cases. My advocacy is not to do that. Let the process go forward. Let these opinions come out, if indeed they will come out. There is time for the 11th Circuit to issue its opinion. There is time for Tanya Chutkan to issue her opinion, even knowing that sometime soon, upon leave of court, these judicial officers will almost certainly dismiss those cases. That's the advocacy, again, based upon the kinds of things the oath of office, Len's talking about, that Mary's talking about, the rule of law, all those kinds of things as a part of our discussion. Delighted as well to have on our line this weekend, Gene from Eau Claire. Gene, you've been waiting for a while. Delighted to have you be a part of our discussion.
Thank you for that closing argument and your advocacy. Please put it in writing and send it to America. I hope and pray that those people in the United States, the judges, the DOA, understand and consider the long-term harmful effects that impact all of us who witnessed this attack on our government, our Constitution, and our House. I'll tell you something. I have nightmares. I never had nightmares in my life. I do now. And I can still hear that man, "We're going to the Capitol." I cannot get that out of my head. I was watching live. I was watching the terror going on. And to dismiss this without anything for the people we are victims to, and there is justice for all in this country. So there you've got my 50 cents, and thank you so much, James. Please keep up the great work. I always look forward to listening to you on Saturdays. Thank you so much. Keep up the great work. Bye.
Jane, thanks so much for your contribution and your advocacy. Hear, hear. I agree with you entirely. Let's talk about, again, the rule of law, justice. And the advocacy that I'm making this weekend is not for something extraordinary. It's just for the application of exactly what you described, Gene, to this particular circumstances, unprecedented in the history of our nation. I know that. You know that. All of our callers know that. Len knows that. Mary knows that. Everybody else who's listening this weekend knows that as well. Let this process go forward for the integrity of our nation. And if indeed, as I said, Donald Trump and his administration choose to abrogate not the law, not the Constitution, but the traditional arm's length relationship that has always existed, let him do that. And let him be the one who is directing his attorney general, directing his people at Maine Justice to dismiss this case. Let him be the one to do that and tell us, once again, define for us who this president is going to be, presumably in his first hours, in his first days, what he thinks about the rule of law and the justice and courts, all the things we have talked about on this broadcast and others of civic media around the country, not just in this format. Let's begin to define who Donald Trump will be with this. Let him do that, Mr. Attorney General Merrick Garland. Let him do that, Mr. Special Counsel Jack Smith, as we go ahead. Appreciate those texts, those questions, that advocacy, and all the other things that we've talked about this weekend. Let us move then into the other piece of which, much related to that. This is also in the category of advocacy of opinion about what we're going to see come January 20th and also beyond. I promised at the start of our broadcast this weekend that I would articulate for you many of the things we've talked about before, but putting them together in the context of seven, that's right, seven different things, key factors that are going to be leading come January 20th and the weeks and months and years ahead to what I will describe as a supremely powerful presidency, a supremely powerful government of the sort that we have not seen before in our history. And here are the reasons why I say that. Many of the things I'm going to talk about, we have talked about before. Let me tell you the seven things that come together as a result of recent events, the history, the conduct of individuals, the decision by the American population recently. Seven different things. Let's begin with the Supreme Court on July 1. We've talked about a lot again this weekend. We've talked about it a lot because it changed the Constitution. A Supreme Court majority through the Chief Justice and five associate justices, not without scathing dissents by three others, we know who they are, vest in the presidency with a capital P. Anybody who occupies that office, yes, including Joe Biden, including Donald Trump, a huge amount of authority, expansive immunities, absolute. As to the Department of Justice, do what you want, Mr. President. And with respect to all the other engagements that a president has, with respect to agencies, people around his cabinet table, there you get presumptive immunities. And there the presumption is you're immune. And that many, if not all, the things we're talking about are official acts. It's only for a narrow area of private things, which Donald Trump maintains do not exist. A huge conveyance in the wake of the July 1 decision of supreme authority, establishing in many ways what Sonia Sotomayor said, we've got kings again. That's number one. Number two, yes, indeed, the selection by the American population of a candidate who's promised to exercise those authorities, constitutional authorities, according to the Supreme Court, legislative authorities. He's going to do it promptly. He's going to do it aggressively in the areas of immigration. That's a Justice Department issue. That's also a Homeland Security issue, but it's a justice issue. Issues of education, economics, health care, environment, and others. A president now who will exercise the authorities given to him. As we continue here on Amicus, five more key factors leading to a supremely powerful government come January of 2025. Stay with us. ¶¶
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
As a network, we're called Civic Media because a big part of it is we want to start modeling how civic discourse really should happen and being respectful of each other's opinions, even if you disagree, you know, like they should be given a platform.
If Rocker and I can get along, right. We can all get along.
I know,
along.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Rocker?
Yeah, that's right, Jimmy.
Well, you do have a wall in between the two of you, so
glass.
It's like...
It's only glass.
Tear down the walls. Listen to Max Inc. Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
This is Amica Solar Review. My name is Jim Santel, and this is the final segment of our weekly weekend program. Now articulating based upon recent events, including the election of Donald Trump, but in context of all other things that have happened in recent months and years and even established mechanisms out there, 7 different things that are going to change dramatically the nature, the power of our government, specifically the executive branch, come 12:01 on January 20th of 2025, already articulating the importance, the cannot be overstated, the significance of this huge catastrophic decision on July 1, granting a president, any president, huge authorities to act without supervision, without the possibility of any criminal prosecution for crimes committed in office. Stunning even still to say it out loud. 2nd, an American president who will take the office on January 20th, who has said that he is going to use those powers, that huge amount of authority established and described by the Supreme Court in the first pages of that opinion called Trump versus the United States. This articulation of a muscular, very, very active, very, very nimble, need to move quickly, need to move with strength, presidency. Donald Trump taking his commission from our Supreme Court, another branch of government is going to act. He's told us he's going to do that. No reason to believe he will not. Also announcing recently, of course, he's going to do something major with respect to immigration. Mass deportations, he says, on January 20th, if not just beyond that. Also in the areas of education, economics, healthcare, environment, all kinds of things, agriculture, commerce, labor. President has huge authorities, not only under the Constitution, which had checks and balances, until the Supreme Court said, no, you've got a supreme executive. That's number two. Number three, also happening just a few days ago, the election of a Senate that will almost certainly now be in the hands of the same party of the president. And what does that mean? We talked about this in our last broadcast. The notion that this president will now be able to nominate, and the Senate under the Constitution will give the advice and consent they're obliged to do, and will confirm promptly and predictably, not unanimously across the board, but promptly and unanimously inside the party, all of the president's nominees. No more contests, no more decisions about whether or not a vote can, in fact, sink or support a particular candidacy. With a majority in the Senate, again, you only need a 51-vote majority. All of those nominees get confirmed promptly to implement all of those policies across the board in all those different agencies, those cabinet offices, including the Department of Justice. All of that will happen quickly. And yes, the Democrats, the minority Democrats in the Senate, will raise not just concerns, but will be horrified by some of these potential nominees, likely. But they will not have the votes to overcome what Donald Trump and his loyalists will want to do, which is place in all these positions other loyalists to do that bit. That's number three. Number four, a Supreme Court that also, in that Loper Bright Enterprises case, articulated a new way of understanding the relationship between courts and agencies, basically stripping the courts of much of their discretion. Remember this issue, Chevron deference, no more. 40 years, no more. And so the courts will decide those things. And you might say, well, gee, that's not an executive decision. It's not. But it's placing in the hands of a Supreme Court right down Pennsylvania Avenue a huge amount of authority and in federal judges around the country to do things that at least up until June 28th of this year, they did not have the discretion to do. That changes the way in which government works. And much related to that is the next one, that this president is going to embrace this thing called the unitary executive theory. We talked about this last week as well, this notion that all of those agencies, which are now subject to review by a Supreme Court that Donald Trump plainly has benefited from, its decisions, three different decisions, not only giving him effectively cover when it comes to immunity, but keeping him on the ballot, keeping him also with respect to that Fisher case, protected under that ruling as well. A Supreme Court that is also now going to be enforcing a non-Chevron world. A Supreme Court that has told the president that he is immune from prosecution. America now electing a candidate in the wake of that, embracing a unitary executive theory, a unitary executive who has responsibility for the oversight and the direction of people in agencies, some of which, not all of which, but some of which have heretofore been independent. Now, under this theory, this huge amount of authority granted him with the imprimatur, it's in the written order from the Supreme Court, a huge amount of authority to engage in that conduct, and effectively also giving him the permission to do another thing with respect to those agencies, and that is eliminate the civil service. We talked about this before as well. This Schedule F that Donald Trump issued at the end of his first term, rescinded, thankfully, by Joe Biden when he came into office, he's going to reissue that. How that will work, who knows? But changing civil servants across the country in all these agencies who may not be loyal to the president and his policies, changing them into at-will employees, that is huge. That is a huge amount of authority and power Supreme Court has given him and that Donald Trump has said he is going to exercise. The unchecked authority also under the pardon power of the presidency, that's in the Constitution. That's new, not new. And yet, this is a president who has said that he is also going to pardon many people, including presumably the 1,200 people already convicted for the insurrection on January 6th of 2021. Others in the ambit, virtually unfettered, no check and balance on that one. This is James Madison stuff. And so no check and balance on that either as he issues pardon. And oh, by the way, a lot of disagreement about whether or not you can pardon yourself, as one of our callers suggested or at least inquired early on. My own view is you can't, but we'll see if he does that. Of course, this is my other advocacy, the reason why the present Justice Department should not dismiss those cases. Let's see if Donald Trump wants to pardon himself for those cases if they're still pending. And finally, number seven. Another thing related to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court also has advocacy in front of it from this administration in major cases pending right now, including a transgender case, including that ghost guns case that we talked about. Under a new administration, this administration, Donald Trump, can indeed tell his attorney general, his solicitor general, to change positions on those issues, transgender rights, gun rights, many other things in the 40 or so cases now pending, could change positions of the government and change the advocacy come January 20th. All of that accomplishing a huge transformation of power, some of it based upon existing authorities, a lot of it based upon the decision by an incoming president, Donald Trump, to exercise those authorities to create a unitary presidency, a unitary executive branch. We'll talk more about that and other implications in our next broadcast coming up next Saturday here on Amicus, a Law Review.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, we're all about Madison as I welcome comedian Johnny Beaner back to the show, and then WMDX morning show radio legends John Peterson and Gordy Young join the show.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
The Todd Alba Show.
Managing editor of E-Bombs World, Mr. Peter Rapine.
Google this week released a new product, the new AI overview. If you Google search, can I use gasoline to cook spaghetti? Google says, no, you can't use it to cook spaghetti, but you can use gasoline to make spicy spaghetti dishes.
Not recommended. Do not do that.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.